And we're now recording. Lectionary lunch, we're on both on the V,
whatever this is, video, the
digital, and on the iPod.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that is. All right, well, lectionary lunch, our psalm for today is the appointed psalm, Psalm 68. It's too long for the reading, so they actually have given us just a section of it, verses 8 through 20. So we're going to be going through verses 8 through 20. I wrote this down, what one commentator said on this psalm. He says this: both as to text and meaning, this psalm is the most difficult of all the psalms to understand and interpret. He goes on to say, there's no unity, no progression of thought, no outline possible. That's what he said. So of course it's my challenge to make it coherent, which hopefully we will succeed. But you will see there's a number of difficulties with it. Again, yes, Psalm 68. It actually has some very interesting things to say. I think actually is a very appropriate text for the Easter season. All right. So we're going to actually begin at verse 8, and I'm going to have to go rather quickly through it. I got to make sure, because the New Testament guy comes on in about 20 minutes here, and it's quite a long section. So hopefully I'll be able to stop. Just cut me off, because you know I talk too much anyway. Verse 8, Elohim betzeitka lifnei ameka. O God, in your going out before your people. Notice that betzeitka is from yatzah, an infinitive construct. This is to construe it temporally. And just so you get the background, it's referring to, I think, the Exodus here. All right. And what's interesting, just so you get a preview, so you can kind of read it coherently, I think what he does is go through different events in Israel's history. So first he refers to that. Oh God, in your going out before your people, or when you went out before your people, betzadaka be shimon selah, in your marching in the desert. Okay, this betzadaka is again a call, infinitive construct from za'ad, to march. Okay, so in your marching, and then yeshimon is again another word for a desert or wilderness. So in your marching in the wilderness. All right, and this is all a kind of a temporal, the main clause is verse 9. Eretz, rasha, af shamayim natfu mipnei Elohim, zeth sinai mipnei Elohim, Elohei Yisrael. The land shook. So, O God, in your going out before your people, in your marching in the desert, the land shook. Ah, indeed, the heavens, not food, dripped. Okay, the root natap, a simple call. The heavens dripped, mipnei Elohim, before God. All right. Now, this next phrase is one difficulty. I would recommend that you have the zeh referring to God. This one of Sinai. So this one of Sinai. All right. So no, it's taking you from the Exodus to Sinai. Mipnei Elohim, before God, the God of Israel. So the whole verse goes, the earth shook. Indeed, the heavens dripped before God. This one of Sinai, before God, the God of Israel. All right. Verse 10, Geshem netavot natif Elohim nachalaka ve'nila atakonanta. Geshem is rain, and it's actually rain of free will offerings. All right, most translations go with abundant rain, but again, some suggest that it's not referring to physical rain, but it's referring to the manna and quail from heaven. So see, and it's using this imagery that it came down like rain. So the rain of free offerings, free gifts. All right, you natif are. This is this tanif is from nuf. It means to sprinkle, and this is a hip feel. So the rain of free will offerings. Again, either abundant rain or referring to manna and the quail. You again nuf means to sprinkle or to pour out. You poured out. Notice that it's a prefixed form, but again, very often in poetry, especially kind of some that has a more archaic style, you will see prefixed forms used to refer to the past. All right, so you could really use this as just a simple preterite meaning. You could also translate it with a more imperfective meaning. You kept pouring out, O God. All right, or were pouring out. Nakalateka, your inheritance. Okay? Ve-nil-a. That ve-nil-a is a nifal from la'a, to become weary. All right? So you have to translate like this. And your inheritance, kind of referring to God's people, your inheritance, when it became weary. All right, notice there's kind of a incongruency. This is a third masculine singular, but very often, again, you're going to have an incongruence in gender. So the nachala is feminine. So, and as for your inheritance, and it became weary, ata you konanta, you restored it. And that konanta is from the root kun, a poleil, perfect. Second masculine singular plus third feminine singular suffix. So as for your inheritance, and it became weary, see, or when it became weary, you restored it. All right? So again, it's the verses are referring to God's preservation of His people in the wilderness, through the wilderness wandering. Okay, verse 11. Chayateka yashvu ba. Chaya means, as you know, animal. But here again, it's referring to the people. So most translations translate it as community or flock or family or something like that. It's again a very rare meaning for chaya. Your community, yashvu, again you have an incongruency this time in number. They dwelt, from yashav, they dwelt in it, referring to the land. See? Takin, here's another hip feel from kun. You restore, all right, and now the object is let ani Elohim. So you restore in your goodness the poor, let ani, the humble, O God. Okay? So again, verse 11, your family or your community dwelled in it, referring to the land or the inheritance. You establish or you restore, you revive in your goodness or by your goodness the humble, O God, the Ani. Okay, verse 12. Adonai Yeten Omer. God gives, this is from Natan, God gives Omar. God gives a word. Right? Ha, now here's where it gets kind of weird. Ha Mevas wrote Zavara. Ha Mevas wrote is a PL. Notice participle from Basar, to speak good news, and it's feminine. So the women who speak good tidings, all right, are a Zava Rab, are a host, a great host. Zava means host. Okay, the women who speak good news are a great host, a great army. Malke Zevaot, the kings of the armies. Okay, Yidodun, Yidodun. That's from Nadad. Nadad, a call imperfect. It's repeated twice, and it's a third masculine plural imperfect. And it means to flee. So the kings of the armies, they flee, they flee. They flee, they flee. Okay? U nevat bait tekalet shalal. And the inhabitation of the house. Now notice Nevat is in construct, the inhabitation of the house. I would say those who inhabit the house. Again, referring to women. All right, the inhabitation of the house, Tekalek, divide the spoil. Now, what most people are really aren't sure what this all is referring to, but I would suggest it's referring to that event in Judges. Remember when Deborah leads the army and Deborah and, remember, Jael, the two women are the ones who conquer the foe in Judges 5. Judges 4 and 5. Alright? So that it's making this reference. And the reason I think that is because of what comes next. So what the psalmist is doing is now talking about God's care for His people from the Exodus through the wilderness wandering, and now he's just making these oblique references to the subsequent history in the land. All right. So he's talking about the victory that God gave Israel in the time of the judges. And now it's through women. All right? Now verse 14, Im Tishkevun Bein Shefatayim. What the heck does that mean? The Shefatayim is a hard word. It's usually translated sheepfolds. If you lie down from Shakal, if you lie down between the sheepfolds, again, this is probably a pejorative phrase, utterance. And it's reflected again in Judges chapter 5, the Song of Deborah. Remember when Deborah is extolling the different tribes who came out to help? She has a section in there about some people. Why did you remain in the sheepfolds? Because some of the tribes that were east of the Jordan didn't come over to help in the victory. All right. So again, by making an allusion to that event, it seems to be talking about a specific historical event in the life of Israel here. Okay. So if you lie down between the sheepfolds, Kanfe Yona Nech Pabat Kesef, the wings of a dove. Okay, now nechfa is from chafa, means to cover, to be covered with silver. Okay, so if you lie down between the saddlebags, there are wings of the dove, or the wings of the dove, which are covered with silver. Now, does that refer to the spoil that they get even though they didn't come out to help? See? Or is it referring to the fact that they share in the prosperity? And that's, again, how it's usually construed, that even the ones that didn't come out, it went well for them. All right? And the Evroteha and her pinions, here, Birak, Rak, Charutz. Charutz is one of those words that has a lot of different meanings. Here it means gold. It can mean a strict decision. It can mean sometimes a moat. It can mean prosperity or something like that as well. Here it means gold. So, and her pinions are made with or filled with, this is green gold, greenish gold, but it means fine gold, what we would call yellow gold or pure gold. Yeah, rock, greenish. All right. I don't know why they use that word, but that's how they refer to good gold. So if you lie down between the sheepfolds, the wings of the dove are covered with silver, and her pinions with green gold, or fine gold is how you would translate that. Okay? Now, verse 15. Befares Shaddai Melakim Ba. Paras means to spread out or to scatter. Alright? Again here, an infinitive in the spreading of Shaddai, the kings, is the object. When, and this is a PL infinitive. So when Shaddai scatters kings in it, namely the land. So when Shaddai scatters kings in it, Tashleg, it snows. This is from Shalag, a hippil from Shalag. It snows on Salmon. Okay? What in the world's going on here? There's one other place that Salmon is mentioned that's kind of germane, and that's in Judges chapter 9. Salmon is a place near Shechem. And there, in Judges 9, it was in Shechem where Abimelech was one of the sons of Gideon. And he killed the 70 sons of Gideon near Shechem, all right, in order to take the rule. And it's kind of a gruesome story. And so there are some commentaries who suggest that it snowed on Zalman is not to be taken literally, but figuratively referring to the bleached bones of the kings who were slain there. Alright? So again, you can tie the verse back to events in the Judges. That Shaddai, the Almighty, when he scatters kings in the land, it snowed on Salmon. Take it as a figure of speech for the dead Alright. Verse 16. Har Elohim Har Bashan. O mountain of God, Mount Bashan. Bashan is a place east of the Jordan. We don't know any more about it than that. Mount of Gav Nunim. Okay, Gav Nun is a peak, like a jagged peak. So mountain of jagged peaks. O mountain of God, Mount Bashan. O mountain of jagged peaks, Mount Bashan. Verse 17. Lama Teras Dun. Why are you looking in envy at Harim? Why are you looking in envy, O Harim Gav Nunim? Ratzad is a PL, again a very rare word. It means to look with envious eyes. So why are you looking in envy, O mountains of jagged peaks, O jagged mountains? Okay? Now what he's looking at is verse 17. Hahar, at the mountain Hamad Elohim, Leshifto, at the mountain which God desires to live in it. Leshifto is from Yashav, an infinitive. Okay, so why, O jagged mountains, are you looking with envy at the mountain upon which God desires to dwell? Okay. Ah, surely Yahweh Yishkon, from Shakan again, so surely Yahweh inhabits it or dwells Lanetzach forever. Alright, now the mountain that he's referring to is becomes clear in the next verse, but it's probably Mount Zion. So you have this picture here. Notice we're going on further, I think, in history, again to the time that David made Zion. Remember, he built the, and Tim knows this from our former prophets class, it should be all very clear to you, that David captured Jerusalem, and he brought the ark to Zion, and that became the place where God dwelled. Alright, so notice, if you read this against the background of the Exodus and the book of Judges and Samuel, it kind of begins to make sense that in all those events, God is the one who's kind of orchestrating the events. Alright, so verse 18, Rekav Elohim, the chair tree of God, is ribotime. Ribot is 10,000, and here's the dual form. So 10,000s upon 10,000s, alfei shinan. This shinan means repeated. And it's from shana, the verb means to repeat. So, the chair tree of God, 10,000s upon 10,000s, thousands repeated, so thousands upon thousands. Adonai is in them, or Adonai in them, okay? Now you have this, it's again very compressed, Sinai Bakodesh. And I would translate this. It's kind of literally, Adonai is in them, and I think it's referring to the chair tree, okay? Or Adonai is with them, from Sinai to the holy place. See, it's more woodenly, Sinai in the holy place. But remember, in especially poetry, you see the bait, the lamed, and the mem very often can interchange in meanings. What English idiom demands one preposition, Hebrew sometimes can switch those. So, Adonai in them, Sinai Bakodesh, to the holy place. That's how I would translate it. So that he's making the connection between God's presence at Sinai with God's presence in the tabernacle. In the tabernacle of David, and finally, the temple. Remember, even Solomon, when he built the temple, the Kavod Yahweh dwelled there, came down. And so the psalmist is making this theological point that the same God that was present on Sinai, which we saw earlier in the psalm, verse 9, is present on Zion with his people. Okay? Alita lamarom shavita shavi. You have gone up from Allah. You have gone up lamarom, to the height, marom, to the height. Shavita shavi. You have captured captivity. From Shava. Again, that's a call form from Shava. You have captured captivity. So notice he's picturing Yahweh going up to his dwelling place with the captives trailing him. Victorious, in other words. You have captured captivity. Lakachta, you have received matanot. Those are gifts. You can see the root natan in it. You have received gifts. Ba'adam, among men. Or again, from men. Ve'af sororim, And even Sorim, those who rebel, that's from Sarar, another parsable used as substantive. And even the rebellious, Lishkon Ya Elohim, and even the rebellious to the dwelling of Yahweh, to where Yahweh God dwells. All right, so even the rebellious one, or surely the rebellious one. So the captives, his victory is complete. Okay, now verse 20, the last verse. You guys are all tired. Baruch Adonai Yom Yom Yamaslanu Ha'el Yeshuatenu Sela. Blessed be Adonai Yom Yom, day after day, every day. Blessed be Yahweh daily. May He carry us. Okay, Ya'amas Lanu. May He carry us, or may God. Now here, God carry us to our salvation, or something like that. May God care, or may God bring to us His salvation. Again, the relationship between those words is not quite clear. All right, but amas means to carry. Okay, so there you have it. Now you know why it's considered the hardest of all psalms by that one commentary with no coherence. But I think, again, the psalmist is making the point of Yahweh's enduring presence and rule with His people from the Exodus all the way through. And so a sermon here is going to, I think, make the connection between this Yahweh who dwells with His people on Zion and who elected them and chose them, is the same one who did this great act of salvation, this climactic moment of history in the death and resurrection of Christ. So you make the point here that the same God who was with His people Israel all the way through and in these mighty acts was looking forward to this great victory that Christ had at His resurrection, in which He took death captive, so to speak. Yes, one question, then we got to turn it over.
Really quick, would it be too much of a stretch to suggest that possibly verse 14 might be a statement of grace? God blesses even those that don't always do
the same? No, it becomes, right, the verse 14 is an allusion to chapter 5 of Judges, which is used as kind of a rebuke against those who didn't come out. But then you have in verse 14, it seems to be that even they have take part in the spoil. Right.
But the spoils don't depend on your obedience to God. He gives you the spoils anyway.
Yeah, that's right. And I got to...